On that front, I'm going to introduce our next speaker, Peter Slezak. Peter Slezak will be known to many of you as a very outspoken critic of Israel and, of course, a Jewish man who has taken a stand against the Zionist state of Israel and always pointed out, of course, the difference between those two things. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, Josh. It's good to be back again. It's nice to see you all after a month. Ramadan Mubarak to those of you who are celebrating. Together with many other Jews here and around the world, I'm always proud to stand with you once again in solidarity with Palestine. And so I want to talk today about the growing hysteria about anti-Semitism, which Josh mentioned, and the hysteria which is now a serious problem for all of us. In this connection, as every time I speak, I want to give a shout out to the Jews Against the Occupation, who are always here with their banner. For those in the community that are driving the anti-Semitism hysteria, they're never here to see this and to hear what we say, and our presence and our solidarity is a clear answer to the accusations that these rallies are anti-Semitic. Of course, the main point, again, following on the things that Josh was saying, is Jews, generally speaking, are not the victims today. We are the perpetrators, and we have to face this seriously. And in the same spirit, last week, there was a full-page ad you may have seen in the Sydney Morning Herald and in The Age, signed by hundreds of Australian Jews rejecting the US and Israeli plans for the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from Gaza, and generally, yes. For over a year now, the horrors of the genocide in Gaza mean that we are all, and especially Jews, are facing one of the greatest moral tests of our time. We've all seen the drone images of Gaza, which looks like Hiroshima in 1945 after the atom bomb. Who in their right mind can believe Israeli propaganda that this is in self-defense targeting Hamas operatives and militants? It's bullshit. Given the devastation and the sheer quantity of bombing on Gaza, which exceeds all of the bombs dropped in the Second World War, Chomsky in 1971, Noam Chomsky, he remarked on the Vietnam War, and they're relevant today, he said, "With no further information than just the tonnage of the bombs, a person who has not lost his senses must realize that the war is an overwhelming atrocity." And that's what we can say without knowing anything else about what's happened in Gaza. And in his many speeches, which are still important today, he made the point that it's relevant to say that there's no powerful outside force that can call us to account, and the change will have to come from within. And that's one of the problems that confronts us. But of course, the problem that confronts us is that dissent is always seen as a threat by those with power and privilege. And that's why, again, as Josh mentioned and I mentioned, people like Randa Abdel Fattah and Antoinette Latouf and others are so important. Today, we're being subjected to intense propaganda and efforts to deny Israel's crimes, but actually it's not working. And this is because everyone can see the truth, the obscenity, on our mobile phones. So Israel and its flunkies in the Zionist lobby have had to turn to their traditional propaganda methods. They've been ramping up to unprecedented levels an obsessive, hysterical campaign against anti-Semitism. This is intended to be a distraction, a diversion from the horrors of Israel's genocide, and we are being inundated in the media with panic about an alleged explosion of anti-Semitism and concerns about Jewish safety. It's all bullshit. And of course, as part of this, the Palestinians are expected to put aside their suffering, their trauma, and their grief, and they are supposed to pander to Jewish discomfort about a slogan or a poster. The cricket commentator Peter Lalor was sacked because people said they were triggered by the sound of his voice, for fuck's sake. And we're supposed to worry about the feelings of Jews, a lot of students, who feel unsafe because seeing a kefir. Well, I say, fuck 'em. The brilliant Randa Abdel Fattah was more eloquent. She said, and it's worth quoting her very appropriate remarks, she said, "Since when the victims of genocide have the responsibility to defer and to protect the feelings of those who enact, support and enable their own genocide. That's the right point. And of course, for her courage and her powerful moral voice, Runda has been targeted by the Zionist thought police in a McCarthy-style witch hunt. Her government research grant has just been suspended by the Education Minister, Jason Clare. Shame. Now, that indicted war criminal, Benjamin Netanyahu, actually said, of course, that anti-Israel sentiment is anti-Semitism. But one Jew online, he replied quite appropriately. He said, "Don't carry out a genocide in the name of the Jewish people, and maybe the Jewish people will face less blowback." He said, "Thanks for endangering us, you genocidal maniac." That's why so many decent Jews here and around the world are saying, of course, the slogan, "Not in our name." Unfortunately, not enough Jews are saying that. But the anti-Semitism smear is only becoming more and more weaponized, partly because, of course, how badly Israel is behaving, historically disproportionate kinds of atrocities. And the anti-Semitism smear is weaponized to silence Palestinian voices and those who speak out on their behalf for human rights, international law, truth and decency, like, of course, as I mentioned, the wonderful Antoinette Latouf, who was sacked from the ABC. Shame. Now, the Australian Jewish News has a headline to indicate the hysteria. The quote was, "Anti-Semitism is ASIO's top priority." That is the number one security concern, apparently, in terms of possible threat to lives. But according to the federal police themselves, the terrifying anti-Semitism in Australia includes graffiti by people who are paid by foreign actors, as reported in the Sydney Morning Herald, who can't even spell Israel properly. And besides, it's not anti-Semitic when graffiti says "fuck Israel," and these clowns can't even spell "fuck" correctly either. Sky News, predictably, had an anti-Semitism summit a few days ago, and the Executive Council of Australian Jewry co-director Alex Rifkin said, among many things, that's ECAJ, "We face a crisis that has brought open support for terrorism into our streets." Of course, that means us and our rally. Shame. So Rifkin proposed a 15-point plan of action, which I won't go through, but these are all totalitarian mechanisms of thought control that would have impressed Stalin or Mao Tse-tung. For example, to just take one, he said, well, there should be a declaration of a national emergency, apparently. And also, there should be legislation which makes tougher disciplinary action against academics. Of course, they have in mind Randa Abdel Fattah. Shame. Now, all of this is very serious. As a university academic, I have to tell you, in case you don't understand fully, this is a serious threat to the traditional values of academic freedom, which are enshrined around the world, although we've sort of given it away in Australia. Tenure, for example, at universities is meant to protect dissident, unpopular opinion. As one commentator remarked, the ECAJ, the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, in short, has become drunk on the possibility of using the state to advance Zionism and to suppress its critics. This is a very serious matter. Now, however, again, if I may quote Noam Chomsky, he suggests, quoting, "The social and intellectual role of the university should actually be subversive. We should encourage dissident thought. That's what universities are for." And he says, "Students should learn what he called intellectual self-defense against the propaganda, against the massive government apparatus." If I had a longer lecture, I'd go into the history of the famous ancient Greek Socrates and how he was put to death by the state for his dissident voices, for corrupting the youth and for challenging the gods of the state. That's the model that a real university should promote: dissident criticism. Well, of course, as a result, universities have been a key target in the present political witch hunt against anti-Semitism. And now, to their disgrace and shame, 39 public universities have adopted a version of the very problematic, pernicious IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, which is a direct attack on the fundamental freedoms. If you know what that is, you know what a disgrace that is. If you haven't followed it, the IHRA definition has actually been repudiated by its author and dozens of academics and legal people around the world. And the point is that it's been weaponized precisely to silence criticism of Israel. I mean, for example, to take one very important example, one of the provisions of the definition is to say that it's anti-Semitic to say Israel is a racist endeavor. Well, it's just a fact Israel is a racist endeavor. For example, if you don't know, quickly, in 2018, Israel passed the nation state law, according to which Israel is the state of the Jews alone. Well, 20% of the population are Palestinians who've been there forever. Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and Israel's own B'Tselem recently have detailed reports showing that Israel is an ethno-supremacist apartheid regime. So these are overwhelming evidences that Israel is a racist endeavor, and saying it can get you into trouble. Let me try to wind up a little bit by saying that you'd be aware by now, I guess, no one cares more about anti-Semitism than I do. My mother and grandmother survived the Nazi concentration camp, the extermination camp, Auschwitz, and I grew up with their stories. So I think I understand what anti-Semitism is where I see it, and I'll call it out before anybody else. But in fact, it's very important for me to say I have never experienced anti-Semitism at our rallies, certainly not here, and never in Australia anywhere in my lifetime. It's worth saying, I haven't got time to go into it, but the wonderful American academic Miesheimer makes the same point about this insane pretense that there's this wave of anti-Semitism, especially at universities. He says it's not true, and he makes the point that, of course, as you know from the encampments that we hear at the universities and in America, very prominently were Jews setting up their tents and with their banners and having ceremonies. So the idea that the encampments were some kind of threat is also nonsense and a smear. This is all a serious threat, as Miesheimer points out, to the very fundamental idea of universities as we have understood it. Well, despite the official warning in my classes against saying the wrong thing, I always used to introduce my classes by saying that they're not a safe space for ideas you don't like or that you disagree with. That's what university should be about. Well, finally, it's always, as every time I have the privilege to speak with you, it's important because of the public attention to what we say and the Zionist attempts to smear us. Let me repeat what I've said on every time I've had the privilege to speak to you. It's important for me to say something about the chant which we use and which is heard at rallies all around the world, from the river to the sea. The apologists for Israel's crimes claim that that slogan is anti-Semitic or even a call for the annihilation of Israel. But the charter, it's in the context of the fact that the charter of Israel's governing Likud party says there will be no Palestinian state from the River Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea. And our government is just gaslighting us when they keep talking about the two-state solution. Netanyahu has openly rejected it. It's part of the Israeli plan to annex the whole of historic Palestine. Netanyahu has repeatedly rejected this possibility of Palestinian state. And in July 2024, the Israeli Knesset actually voted overwhelmingly against the establishment of a Palestinian state. So tell Albanese and Wong to face the reality that there's no two-state solution. In connection with the chant, the point that I want to end on, let me end on what I think is very important for us, that the chant that we hear is a plea for liberation, not for exterminating the Jews. And it's important to listen to Palestinians who have something important to say about this. For example, my Palestinian colleague, Dr. Lana Tartour, the Palestinian woman, has pointed out, quote, "We ought to listen to Palestinians who have been articulating liberation as an inclusive project of equal rights for all. This is not anti-Semitism." And let me end by saying we should also listen to the Palestinian president of the APAN, Australia-Palestine Advocacy Network, my friend Nasser Mashni. He's very eloquent, and I can't resist quoting his remarks. It's important that he's saying this, and it's our critics and the government who should hear this. Let me quote. He says the call, the chant, is a vision for a shared political reality beyond Israel's current brutal colonial apartheid. It should not be controversial for Palestinians to reject oppression, he says, or to aspire for liberation, to live a life in their own homeland free from Israel's racist system of control. And he goes on to say, finally, That's why we say Palestine will be free from the river to the sea for everyone, he says. And he says very eloquently, if you have a problem with everyone being free because you only want some people to be free, the problem is not the chant, the problem is you. I'd add only a couple of things. Of course, the problem is not anti-Semitism. So next time, whoever they are, whoever you are who wrote those graffiti, make sure you spell it properly. Fuck Israel, fuck Zionism. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.